All right, Joe. Welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. So I was reading Will Griggs' article on Lou Rockwell earlier. They call that scam Sharia. But then I went and I pulled up his blog and I saw the blog version. And it's got the Iron Sheik from World Wrestling when I was a little kid on the front page there. I'll break your back and make you humble, he declares. Welcome to the show, Will.
Scott, it's always a pleasure.
All right, man. Well, I know you don't like it. I don't either, but everybody, take a listen to this here for a minute.
Let me tell you what's going on over there right now. Make no bones about it. That is pure, unadulterated evil.
That's right.
And I don't even care. I don't even care if you think I'm crazy anymore. Because I have a beautiful daughter. I have a wonderful 19-year-old son who's a United States Marine. As a matter of fact, I know quite a few Marines who will be very happy to help these terrorists to an early meeting in paradise.
All right, well, that's about enough of that. And the only reason I bothered playing that is because that's a city council lady down there in Orange County. One
exactly.
of these, Yorba Linda or one of these godforsaken places, Will. And you listen to the crowd cheer. This isn't some rerun. Think about what you must not have been able to learn in the last decade in order to have been at that rally. And, of course, they're protesting. I should have set it up better. They're protesting a bunch of peaceful Muslims going to some meeting to raise money for hungry people or some, you know, completely mild-mannered, innocuous thing. And there's, you know, women and children and these nice people in the video walking into the building. And there are these madmen out there who are calling the peaceful women and children terrorists at the
yeah.
top of their lungs and chanting, go home, like, who put this thing on, man? Where did this come from?
Well,
is David Horowitz behind this or something? Which think tank put these idiots up to this?
I'm still trying to figure out which of the think tanks was chumming the waters here, but there was a coalition put together of some of the, I'm going to use the expression because it's the only one that fits, red state fascist organizations, that wanted to use this as what our good friend Eric Hoffer of blessed memory called a unifying element. And as a result, you have the spectacle of peaceful and assuming people and terrified children running this gauntlet of people whose faces are contorted in hate, who are flinging spittle and abuse at them, and considering what they're doing to be patriotic because they're standing in the gap against terrorists who are gathering to raise money for battered women's shelters. It's just a perfectly repulsive spectacle that seems to illustrate the perverse determination some people have to live down to every stereotype of mob rule or to make vivid some of the caricatures we've seen in, 1980s sitcoms, very special episodes of sitcoms that end with hugs and lessons.
Special episodes, yeah.
Or 1970s vintage after-school specials where we're supposed to be teaching and learning lessons about toleration of other people's viewpoints. It just amazes me, but once again, being somebody who believes in the depravity of human nature, unfortunately there's plenty of evidence to support that belief. I'm not surprised by it, although I'm thoroughly disgusted
by it. Well, the thing is, you know, it seems so fake to me, because going outside and chanting with signs and protesting, that's a left-wing thing. Right-wingers don't do that. They got to be organized from the top down to go outside
yeah.
and do some organized thing like that.
Well, there's always an undertow that's generated that pulls people into the sort of seductive embrace of collectivist hatred. And for some reason, you can attract more flies with hatred than you can with either honey or vinegar, as it turns out. And the thing I find most repellent here, of course, is the fact, once again, that you had people who are as American as I am. I was born and raised in Idaho. Many of the people who attended this meeting, who are members of the Muslim faith, were born and raised around California. They're being told to go home as if this were not their home. And so when you define in terms of the people whom you will exclude on the basis of religion, you're on a track that leads to some pretty ugly destinations very quickly. And American history, while not as lurid as the history of, say, Central Europe or the Balkans, is unfortunately replete with plenty of examples of just how ugly things can get, particularly when people get hungry and desperate and are looking for a convenient foreign other upon whom to repose all of their resentments.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Let me pretend that I wonder that maybe I'm just naive here, Will, and that the liberals have poisoned my mind with this Islam-loving nonsense and whatever, and I'm so sure that America started the war and isn't reacting to some attack out of the clear blue sky, and I got my head just all upside down about this. But you're, I know, a religious man, a Christian, as you said, a Native American, and I know that you got a lot of love for the whole George Washington red, white, and blue kind of thing. I've been reading you for decades now, I guess. And so, you know, maybe there's some insight to be had from a conservative right-wing point of view that says that, hey, man, Sharia law and the Muslim, you know, too much Muslim influence or control over America or our court systems or our future somehow is going on, and maybe I've just blinded myself to it just because I detest the people saying it so much, but maybe there's something that Americans really do have to fear about Islam. Will, what do you think?
Scott, if you're blinded, I share that disability, because as I've examined this issue as somebody who's a socially and religiously conservative Christian anarchist, for lack of a better description, and also an incorrigible Trekkie, I've come to the conclusion that we actually have more to worry about in terms of being governed by the Ferengi rules of acquisition than we have to worry about regarding the supposed threat of Sharia law being codified and institutionalized in this country. The Muslim influence in this country is negligible in terms of social policy and in terms of cultural impact, but you know where it is very, very strong is in the upper echelons of the government afflicting us, in large measure because of, as I've mentioned before, the de facto entente between Riyadh and Washington to keep the dollar valid as a currency for doing petroleum transactions. And that's one of the reasons why we become dhimmis, if you will. We're paying a form of dhimmitude in terms of the efforts of the government ruling us to retain political control over the petroleum resources in the Middle East, and that leads us into paying blood taxes in the form of thousands of men dying in Iraq over the course of a war that's lasted two decades now, that began with one of the charming people running the Emirate of Kuwait talking about the white slaves from America who will do the killing and dying on their behalf. You're talking about people are being used as janissaries, as new soldiers in the Ottoman Empire. That's how they were referred to. They were the tax collectors and the soldiers of the realm. Well, we've got that same kind of a relationship going on right now in which we're paying taxes, not only in terms of our wealth, but in terms of our very lifeblood, to support a system in which the government ruling us not only does the bidding, as it sees fit, of squalid people like the Saudis and the Kuwaitis, the ruling elite, I should specify, they're squalid everywhere. It's not just in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait that you find the scum rather than the cream rising to the top, but also promoting Sharia at gunpoint in Iraq. The new constitution inflicted on that country that was written by a committee put together by the Coalition Provisional Authority enshrines Sharia as the highest law of that country. All the laws that govern Iraq have to be Sharia compliant. Those laws were inflicted on that country at gunpoint, and the guns were being held by American soldiers whose contributions to the defense of our supposed freedom, or the supposed defense of our freedom, are hymned to the skies in evangelical churches pretty much every Sunday somewhere in this country. I mean, they're being used as janissaries, as soldiers of Allah, Colonel Allen West very conspicuously among them. Here's a guy who killed and fought and shed blood on behalf of Sharia, who's now being presented as an expert on radical Islam and the guy who can hold the hordes of CARE and groups like that at bay. It's really not only perverse, it's, I think, a photographic negative, a direct photographic negative, mirror image, reverse mirror image, rather, of reality.
Yeah, you know, it's really strange to me since, do you have any idea how many Muslims there are in America?
The estimates run anywhere from about 3 to 7 or 8 million, and that's a pittance. That's less than a pittance, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I mean, compared to, you know, other numbers, but
yeah, and most of the growth occurs in prisons, which are the largest madrasas in the world because of the war on drugs. That's where most of the recruiting, the propagation, to use the Muslim term, takes place. These people are sent into prison, they're parole violated and kept there, and they're marinated in Islam, they come out as Muslims. That's where the growth's occurring.
Yeah, call it blowback. What, now I wonder if that's even a problem at all, actually, you know.
I don't think
it seems like Islam would be really good for prisoners, if you ask me, most of them. But hang on one sec. Well, not the drug war prisoners, but violent ones, you know. I don't know, maybe not. Hang on, it's Will Grigg, Pro Libertate, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. on the line is my Facebook friend, Will Grigg. He writes the blog Pro Libertate at freedominourtime.blogspot.com. He's the author of the book Liberty in Eclipse, and we're talking about the scam Sharia. So you were pointing out, I think, you know, the obvious irony that apparently is not so obvious to the people engaged in the irony of being the biggest cheerleaders for the war to install Sharia law under the authority of Muqtada al-Sadr, no less, and Ayatollah Sistani there in Iraq. They're the same ones screaming and crying about Sharia coming here when, as you were pointing out, it can't, because there just ain't enough Muslims to try to make it that way, assuming that they even wanted to, which would be a pretty big assumption. Huh?
Well, the only people who can hold those two ideas simultaneously in all seriousness must be people who suffer from a severe irony deficiency, because, as you point out, there's no way you can reconcile those two positions if you're intellectually honest, any more than you can embrace the war on some drugs, the war on basically unregulated bloodstreams of American citizens that sends how many millions of people into prison systems where many of them come out as devout Muslims of various kinds. Well, you can support that while at the same time saying that you ought to have legal impediments placed on the beliefs of people who espouse the Muslim religion, which is what this asinine measure in Tennessee is all about. It's about criminalizing a belief system. Sure, it's gussied up as if they're dealing with people who are providing material support for terrorism, but the material support, as defined in the text of that bill, would be a belief in Sharia law. That would be considered, according to the bill once again, prima facie evidence of involvement in a seditious conspiracy to install Sharia law, thereby overthrowing what remains of constitutional government in Tennessee and the rest of the United States, or as I prefer to refer to it now, the Soyuz.
Well, come on now, you must have it completely backwards. You're saying limiting Sharia law is violating the Constitution, in Sharia law usurping and overthrowing the Constitution, enslaving the people of Tennessee somehow?
Well, that's certainly not what many of the authors of the Declaration and the Constitution thought. You can see where, for instance, in the writings of Thomas Jefferson regarding the Virginia Statute on Religious Liberty, he explicitly included what he called Muslimin, people who were adherents of Islam, which is to say some variety of Sharia law, among those whose freedom of belief was to be encompassed within the protections of that document. George Washington made similar pronouncements. John Adams, who was certainly more authoritarian even than Washington, and much more authoritarian than Jefferson even at his worst, was of the belief that Muslims, to the extent they believed in a transcendent God and a purpose in life and accountability in an afterlife, were people who would make very good citizens within the Anglo-American framework of common law that the Constitution was supposed to embody and codify.
Well, and of course they did, and they've been here this whole time,
exactly.
Even since long before the Constitution.
That's exactly right.
In fact, I read one thing, I wish I had the good footnote, but it's searchable, and I think I remember it was a credible source saying that the World Trade Center was actually built on the site where there used to be a mosque back, you know, 100 years ago or maybe 200.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. And, of course, at Ground Zero, of course, you can find, assuming, of course, there's any of the residue left from the collapse of the towers, but in that debris you could find the remains and the material residue of Muslims, Americans of Muslim faith, and the facilities they used as a mosque within one of the towers that collapsed. It's not as if, once again, you're dealing with people who are completely other and completely foreign to the American experience. There's very limited, very small footprint that they have made, if you will, in American history. I'm not going to say that their contributions in the founding era were somehow notable, but they were around and their presence was noticed by the founders of the United States government and the Constitutional Republic. And it's not as if, once again, we've always been at war here over this issue. This is something that is being ginned up and exacerbated by people who want to keep us in a fine froth, a fine frenzy of hatred of an incorrigible other with whom we must be perpetually at war. It's the clash of civilizations gambit at work.
Have you ever read the Quran, Will?
I've read a great deal of it. I find it a little bit rough going because I have to make allowances for the fact that I come from a completely different cultural background, and of course my religious convictions are quite different. But I have read the war surahs, and one of the things that I find is that they describe a doctrine of defensive warfare, which is, boiled down to its essence, the non-aggression principle. If they're aggressed against, they reserve the right to pursue not total war. That's an interesting thing as well. Even when they're pursuing war defensively as part of jihad, there are explicit requirements in the Quran to exempt non-combatants and innocent people from the warfare tactics that are employed in the defensive jihad. That's certainly not been the practice of the supposedly Christian government of the United States, at least since, well, dust off the history of the wars against the American Indians, and you'll get some pretty potent counterexamples of what we're describing here.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I can't help but think of Robert Pape at a time like this. He wrote a book called Dying to Win, as you know, and there's a sequel to it, Cutting the Fuse, I think.
Yeah.
Where he studied all this terrorism, and he pointed out that you look at Sri Lanka, where this war went on forever, where one side, I think, was some kind of Marxist, Hinduist, and the other side was Buddhist. I might have the Marxists on the wrong side. I forget which was which. But anyway, nobody was Muslims at all, and there was a massive suicide bombing campaign by the Tamil Tigers there. It was about occupation. And then he also says, hey, check out on the next page over here, let's look at Sudan, where you have what would be genocide in any smaller population,
yeah.
You know, 500,000, something like that over a few years, tons. But everybody there is, you know, more or less, there's a little bit of a mix, but in the Darfur region, we're not talking about the civil war in the south, we're talking about in the Darfur region. Basically, everyone there is Arabic and speaks Arabic, and it's really nomads versus farmers and this kind of thing. Everybody is Muslim. Not too different. They're different strains of Sunni Islam. And there's no suicide bombing there.
Yeah.
The suicide bombing comes when there's occupation, whether it's the Shiite Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, or whether it's Hamas in Palestine, or so-called the Islamic State of Iraq in Iraq, or whatever. The suicide bombing is not about Islam.
No.
It's no different than an American squad praying before they go out on a mission. You know, yeah, it's dressed up in religion to make it seem legit, but all it is politics by other means.
Exactly.
It's just war. That's all it is.
Yeah, it's the defining enterprise of this affliction that we call the state, which is war. One thing I want to point out with respect to that ugly spectacle in Yorba Linda is that when they started chanting, go home, the people who were gathered in this yelling mob were living up to or living down to a stereotype that's becoming increasingly commonplace. In Twin Falls, Idaho, just before Christmas, there was an incident in which a man walked up to a woman wearing a Muslim headdress, asked if she was a Muslim, and then immediately said, go home, you don't belong here. And according to the local paper, this is the account of what happened. When the woman said she was a Muslim, the alleged assailant told her he spent 2.5 years in Iraq, and quote, my friends were killed by you, I was blown up by you, you have no place in this country. The question, of course, is what place did he have in Iraq?
Hey, wait, I thought he went there to help those people.
Exactly. Isn't that what we're always told?
It's madness.
It is.
It's insane.
It's
you know,
worse.
The empire's already falling apart. It's going to get worse. The inflation's going to get worse. And it's going to get worse. But boy, do we have a front row seat to the madness taking over America now. It is just insane.
It's not going to be boring.
Yeah, well, you can read all about it at prolibertatefreedominourtime.blogspot.com. The book is Liberty and Eclipse. Thanks, Will.
You bet. Take care, Scott.
Will Gregg, everybody.